This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis. Hello, hello, hello. This is the Out of Bounds podcast. My name's Adam Jabber. And man, I have tried to record intros a lot today. It's taken 20 tries, but we're getting it done. Things are happening here, and we've got a great episode for you today. Today we're talking with Michael Bird Schaefer, on Instagram. Michael's the man. He is a Black Crows athlete. He is a Chamonix frequenter. Or frequent flyer. I guess there was a good opportunity there to get a birdism in there. But I learned what birdisms are. I learned a little bit about flying on skis. Learned a little bit about a lot of things. Michael and I just kind of chatted. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. You can follow Michael on Instagram at birdware. And check out everything he's up to. Check out his flying. Check out his skiing. The whole nine. Before we jump into the episode, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, Sowatch Hemp. Sowatch has been a sponsor of the show for a long time, and that's because they're great. They make some of the best CBD products around. They make everything from salves to soft gels to... Imagine if I just stopped. I was like, they make salves. But also they make tinctures. They make olive oils even. I mean, they make everything. So check out www.sawatch.co, and you can use promo code out of bounds to save 15% off on your purchase. Do it up. Use that code. That stuff is awesome. I use it all the time, and I can't recommend it enough. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Like, rate, review the show on iTunes if you get the opportunity. It helps the show a bunch, helps us grow, helps people find us. Share it with your friends, tell a friend to tell a friend, and we'll keep doing new episodes. Don't forget, Wednesdays are the day when Mr. Adam X's The Pursuit comes out. Always a good conversation. The dude is killing it right now, and I've really enjoyed listening to his... I've actually really enjoyed listening to my podcast just with someone else's voice. So I guess that says something about me as an interviewer. But Adam's doing a really good job, and I hope you guys will check that out as well. And that's basically it. Here's Bird. Bye. Michael, Bird, tell me who you are. Tell people a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, my name's Michael Schaefer. Some people call me Bird. Hopefully not bastard. That's my icebreaker. I'm from Washington State. I'm up here in a place called Twisp, Washington.
Okay.
The foothills of the Cascades. And I ski for a big part of my life. You know, I'm fortunate to have grown up in the mountains and grown up in this little town where we kind of, if you decided to ski, we took care of each other and you could go to ski swaps. And even if you didn't have the means to get your gears, we as a community kind of helped each other out with hand-me-downs, and I started skiing at this little place called the Loop Loop Ski Bowl, and it was 13 towers of a Palma,
yep.
Palma lift, about 1,000 feet tall, and pretty much gives you a great foundation for any kind of skiing you want to do, really, downhill.
Yeah.
And skiing was just became the avenue to enjoy life, you know, to get out there and slide and have a good time.
Yeah, that's very cool. So you mentioned the kind of community aspect of it. Do you think that part has changed much over the course of your career? And like, I mean, from when you were growing up to now?
I don't think so. I think we're super fortunate as skiers and mountain folks to have that community, to have a broader community where we have like-minded people that care about what we're walking around on, what we're sliding on. And we get to tap into a freaking natural source on a regular basis. And if this gives us the good energy to bring it back down and share it with our community and hopefully help others out in one way or another and have a good time, then so be it. You know, I think it's still alive and well. And I was gone for a number of years of traveling around, skiing, being the Avenue, and came back to where I'm from, and the community is still here and alive and well. It's, we have farmers markets and locals are there for each other.
Yeah. Are you still splitting time between, Chamonix and Washington? Is that the case? Like, I believe I read something about that as I was doing some research for this.
You did a little research, huh?
Yeah, learning how to read. Yeah.
Yeah. I understand. I got what they call shamified or shamalama ding dong, as I like to call it. Early on, I went to Chamonix first in 97, and there really opened up my eyes and what was possible in the mountains and what was possible in life, just blam, full-blown exposure coming from a small mountain town. And so it became a big part of my life. And I'm fortunate to still go back there. I ski for Black Crow Skis, which is from Chamonix, France. So I can kind of now call it a work trip. If I go back to the Alps, I can go see the people I'm working with and actually ski with them and who are my friends and still experience that part of life. But I would never give up Washington or where I come from. The wilds of Washington, special place for me and special place in the mountains.
Yeah. Why Washington? Like, I know it's home. Is that the main draw for you, or like what makes it so special? Because I get to talk to a bunch of people on the show and everybody kind of feels like their little corner is the corner to be, for one reason or the other. Like why Washington for you?
I think being just so drawn to the outdoors and tapped into mountains and the wild, there's everything here. And I, after leaving and coming back, and I actually studied environmental studies and some natural earth sciences, and we traveled around the state and just really realizing that, how much is here, from rainforest to desert and everything in between. If you're anybody that likes to experience that kind of thing, it's all here. And where I grew up on the, just right on the Canadian border in the Northern Cascades here, it's still quite wild, if you want to be out there, it doesn't take much to just go outside and be tapped in.
What's Home Hill for you?
Home Hill is the Loop Loop Ski Bowl.
Still.
That's
amazing.
And if I'm not going to be here, I coach kids for January, a little bit of February.
Okay.
We started a little junior, we call it adventure camp, but I put free ride in there so the kids would, so the 14-year-olds would want to do it, and they wouldn't just leave us at the kids camp. But if I can spend time at the Loop and then just locally here in the mountains, and the other place I really like to go is Crystal Mountain. I've spent a lot of time there this year, and it actually saved me. I was coming back from injury and using a snowmobile and trying to get up in the mountains and having big, ski touring, ski randonnée days. It was kind of out of the cards, really. And as I was healing, I had friends down Crystal Mountain way and was able to hook up with them and use the lifts there and ski a lot of good days.
Awesome. How's skiing now? What's the situation like? Is it like here in New England, it's pretty much over, like with the exception of like Tuckerman's Ravine, like it's done here. What about there? What's the story?
We fortunately had a lot of warm, cold spells.
Okay.
And a lot of wind, but actually got quite a bit of snow too. And the some of the steeper faces where we thought we'd have plenty of snow and we would be kind of targets for late spring missions got kind of blasted by the wind. But down lower, because we've had these changes in weather, warm, cold, with plenty of moisture, it's setting up to be a really good spring. So if you don't mind walking a little way, a little while in your tennis shoes, you know, before you put your ski boots on, I think the corn season is going to be quite long, actually. Sick. We're supposed to get snow this weekend. So
no kidding.
We might get that pal corn. You know what pal corn
is? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm down. I wish that we got more days like that. Like it's so up and down right now here. I can't believe we're just talking about the weather. People are going to be like, what are you talking about? But it's funny, man. It's like it's 30 something out today, but it's 75 tomorrow and it was similar the day before. Like it's all over the place. So it's a good thing, I think. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about porn though, not just the weather, but a very
specific
kind of snow.
Porn is pow corn.
Porn is pow corn. And when you, in late April, late April, early May in Washington, maybe in other places, but it's pretty special where you got carvable corn underneath just about 4 inches of spring pow. And if you get it before the sun turns it to peanut butter, you are in for some of the most glorious buffed out frickin' turns on the planet where you can feel your ski underneath, but you got that 4 inches on top. And we're called that's like quad X porn.
That's amazing. So if I go to Washington and I start asking around and I'm like, hey, where can I find the porn? Like, are people going to know what I'm talking about? Or is it just going to be you? Like you're the only one.
I think they will. It's a term we use quite loosely, so I'm pretty sure there'll be others,
yeah,
you know, out there who understand what you're talking about, and not just think that you're looking for some special place downtown Seattle.
Yeah, that I don't know how to use the internet, but yeah. So on this topic of naming, why bird? Why are you called bird? What's the story there? There has to be, right? Like it's so much of your persona and your brand, it seems like even when you answer emails, like your answer get like copy, like KAWPY. Like I love it, and I want to know, where did it come from? What's the story?
Oh my god, this gets deep. It gets full caca real quick.
Tell me.
The bird thing. I wanted to fly since I was a little kid. That's the main thing. You know, most of the time I'm flying in my mind, but really the bird really hit home and became a part of me during initial free ride comps. It was right when the extreme comps were turning to free ride. They didn't want guys to go out there and compete and actually ride extreme and put themselves on the line, you know, for getting first place. So we became these free ride comps, and in the comps, for a man or woman that rode something just incredible that made everybody just go, oh my god, what are they doing up there, they pulled it off, they got the sick bird award. Have you heard about
yep.
This so you get the sick bird award, and it's probably still going on in some places. And if you got the sick bird award, you know, you'd get the big screech from Dak, go, yeah. And so we started saying, what the bird's this guy doing? And we were using birdisms to explain different things like, oh my, he's up in Upper Birdsville and what's the birdict? And so I just started thinking about this word bird. And at the time my friends were competing and being sponsored, and, it was a big draw. And at the I didn't really want or see myself as a sponsored ski athlete. So kind of as a joke, I covered up my labels and I wrote bird on there. Piece of duct tape and a permanent marker. And some people thought I named myself bird, but really the idea was, if you're going out there and you're experiencing things for yourself and following your own passions, that was bird-like. Mm. And so that's sort of how that thing stuck. And if I get to carry that name bird and it inspires people, then you know, I think I'm doing a good job probably. So
I agree.
That's how it took flight. And then I kind of just went with it. And, you know, it makes people smile if they don't know actually what it is. It seems like a positive influence. So I'm flying with it.
Sticking to it. I love it. And yeah, honestly, it's one of the main things that I wanted to ask you about, like, because it's there and it's unique and you own it and it feels correct, I guess. Like, it feels like it goes all to, it doesn't feel like a forced nickname, I guess. Cause sometimes people do this thing where they pretend to have this nickname or a persona, but it's you. It feels like it feels real, I guess.
Well, I've told other people that I wanted to be Dolphin Boy, but that's a whole other story. And
Dolphin Boy.
Yeah. I got stuck with this nickname Bird, but that wasn't really the idea that I would be Bird. It's anybody could be Bird-like.
Right.
That was flapping in their own way. Right. And so, yeah, man, it's fun. It's nice to have something that you can carry that's positive. And then with the social media and stuff like this, it's not like I'm talking actually about myself, which can just get, you know, overwhelming and can kind of bring you down if you're self-absorbed that way. So I can put it on this thing Bird. And not only that, at night, if I really screw up, I can blame it on Bird.
So, I love it.
It's good to have a few alter egos, right?
For sure. So have you been flying, parachuting on skis for a while now? Like, I have questions about this because I don't understand it. Okay. Like, I don't understand what it is exactly. Obviously, like, you're taking off on a parachute with skis on your feet. Is that right? Like, I don't know how often you do this. I just was scrolling through your Instagram like maybe 20 minutes ago and I saw this and I was like, okay, he seems like a good person to ask about this particular activity because I don't understand the idea. I understand the thrill, I think. Mostly, like, I think if you've been skydiving or whatever, like, it's got to be a similar feeling in that respect. But what is it? Like, is there a specific name for this type of thing? I've seen other people doing it, obviously, before as well, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's just now kind of growing in U.S. And I've been doing it in France for quite a while. And the idea was that you could, it's basically take skiing and just broadens it. You got more, it's more, it leaves the mountains more open. So basically it's to take skiing and flying and bring them together so you can actually ride on your skis and then fly where you see fit, you know, where the conditions allow. And especially in the Alps, you can take off and then land and then ride with your wings still overhead and make real ski turns. It's a little bit different, of course, because you got that wing overhead. But then when the cliff comes or the ice or the whatever, you can then fly over it. And now we're using the wing to actually exit from the mountain, where you could ski some big steep thing, and where other people are rappelling, you can use the wing to exit and then fly all the way down to the valley.
Huh.
So it becomes super handy in the springtime when you can actually ski pal up high, then pull the wing out and then fly. And you're not just floating in the air either. It continues that whole free ride all the way down to the bottom.
Huh. Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine. I guess I'm trying to imagine the feeling of it, and also like what to do. Like with so many different aspects of ski, like skiing already to me is so involved. I can't imagine having to be like, okay, what do I do with the wings or the parachute? Like what do I do with that in addition to skiing? You know, like it's I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
I think you know, a lot of people will have flying in their background too that come to this. Skiing was the closest thing to flying that I'd ever felt, and we love that feeling, that gravity and that weightless. And then when you're, I call it full wingspan, when there's no effort and you're just riding down, right, and you can see all the way to the bottom and suddenly you're there. Well, this speed riding or speed flying is a lot the same, where when you take off with this thing, you look where you want to go and you're going there. So it's almost like skiing powder in the sky. And it's the mechanics of it aren't really that complicated. It's weight shifting and looking to one side and leaning, and then you turn that way, and then weight shifting, looking to the other side, and you're turning that way, you know, and it sounds, the mechanics are easy, but it's, and simple, but you definitely need to have a little flight in your background.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't just go right into that.
No, you don't want to just set that thing up and then just try to fly off a hill, because you'll end up crashing real fast. It's definitely touchy, and you want to start with, well, I started with paragliding and okay. then moved to speed flying. But it definitely opens the mountains up to more possibilities, you know, where powder is finite, right? And people can get all frothed out and want to get there, and you have first tracks and in big places like the Alps, where you can all of a sudden choose your own way on the right days with this wing and not have to worry about being in a rush to all try to ski in the same place.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I get the appeal. I guess it's such a foreign thing to me. I figured I'd ask.
Oh yeah. It's a good question. And, what I find for summertime is that, you know, especially here right outside, I'm fortunate to have a hill that I can walk up, you know, and fly down. And the earlier you go in the morning, the more stable the air is, especially in the heat of summer.
Yeah.
And so I can start my day by waking up, going outside, going for a hike and catching the fresh air and flying off the hillside. And then you land on your feet. And it's just like you had a powder morning. So to start your day that way, and it's, you know, unless it's unstable like it is today, when you probably shouldn't be flying, you can start your day out that way, and it feels really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. I can't imagine a better way to start your day. Like, that seems excellent. So that actually leads into the next thing that I was just going to ask you was, what do you do in the summer? Like, what's your deal all summer long? Because I think skiers, especially, the season's only so long. Like, there's only so much snow on the ground, and I think everybody kind of needs a break from skiing regardless, even if you hunt it most of the year. What's your deal in the summer? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm happy when you can finally put the skis away. I mean, around here we have volcanoes and stuff that in the Pacific Northwest, it's pretty easy to, we have this thing called turns all year, and these guys are all gung-ho about getting turns every month out of the year for the whole year.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm happy when I can put my skis away. I might try to go skiing in the summertime, but it just feels good to break out the mountain bike. And with the speed wing, the transition's pretty soft. Like, all of a sudden I'm not going, oh my God, I wish I had another powder day. What the hell?
Right.
I can go outside and fly and, you know, just for the energy level, you know, going from skiing and then not having anything.
Yeah.
A lot of times it can be pretty depressive, right? And you'd be like wondering, like, oh, I don't have this thing. There's an adjustment in your body, your nervous system. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Your nervous system got to go through this almost shock when you've been skiing and getting that feeling on a regular basis. And then suddenly you just don't have anything. And then where's the transition? And a lot of people find that in mountain biking. And I find that with that also, but flying makes it a really easy transition to summer. And then I'm a firefighter in the summertime. So I do wildland.
Awesome.
And I grew up working in the woods, planting trees and thinning, cutting trees down when it was too thick or they were diseased. We subcontract from the Forest Service. So I moved away from that for a long time, was a raft guide and did all these different things to kind of get money in during the summer so that I could ski more full time in the winter, of course. And one thing led to another, and I came back to the community here and I'm able to work with guys I grew up with in the woods who started a business, private contracting from the government for wildland fire.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a very cool.
Yeah.
That's a very cool way to just be out there and actually like still be working, but be out in nature, I guess.
Yeah. And there's camaraderie there, you know, and there's other guys that are like us that are skiers and, you know, want to have their winters off.
Yeah.
And be in the mountains. And you'll meet those guys out there, whether they're smoke jumpers or hot shots or whatever. They're usually, there's usually a few in the crew that devote a big part of their time to skiing. And so if you're working full time in the summer and with fire, especially as a subcontractor, you could work 2 months and make really good money. So it's almost like going fishing or something, but
yeah,
you're working with wildland fire, and fire is something that is becoming more and more prevalent.
Yeah.
Unfortunately as the climate changes and things are getting hotter and drier, it seems like I just did a refresher course so that I could be qualified for this season. And every year it seems like they keep saying it's going to be hotter and drier this year. So, it's a good occupation. It's a good occupation. It's a good way to give back. Sometimes it seems real crazy to show up at a place and have to trust the powers that be to tell you to go out there in this part of the forest and right. be ready to go to battle, because it can be pretty dang scary too.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure that sounds insane, man.
Yeah, and you have maps and you got your meetings in the morning, but then all of a sudden if you showed up at night and they told you to get out here and be at a certain place and you're trying to figure this out and you got guys that you're taking care of and you can see the glow of the fire, you can hear it, but you're not sure, you know, you really got to put your trust into the whole of everybody that's working there.
How do you do that though? Basically. Like that seems first of all, it seems terrifying to me. And it also seems like how do you just get your brain to just be like, okay, I trust these people. I trust the people around me. And I trust that like, I'm not going to go out there and like get like burned alive. Like you're working with wild, like that's an insane thing to me.
Well, it's good to know some things when you're going, if you have time and you have a meeting and then you meet the people that you're working for and with. And there's some really good teams out there, you know, and then there's some other teams that can be really scary when if there's wildfires going on all over the country, you can get teams that come from topography and landscape that are way different than ours. And so all of a sudden these guys in charge want to fight a fire like they would at home when it's way different up here. And that's when local knowledge and guys that are really experienced come into play and have to step up, even though they have seniors above them and say, hey, no, this ain't going to work. We're sure of it. We've watched this. You know, this is the way the winds come up every day. This is the way the fire's going to roll over. We got to rethink this. And yeah, so there's a process.
Yeah.
And it's scary to trust the, you know, the government and all these things we're doing. I mean, we got the COVID, you know, the shot, we got this thing, we got all this stuff. I didn't even want to bring up that, but it's just like that. How do you trust, especially with all the other news you get, right?
I know.
Through all these other avenues, how do you trust what's going on? And you got to trust the greater good. You got to have faith in the greater good that these guys are out there to do the best job that they can for us to be able to do our job so that we can all kind of help each other out and be better people. I mean, otherwise you're going to sit in a freaking dark room in a basement somewhere and freaking be a conspiracy theorist and just say the whole thing's totally flocked.
Yeah.
To use a birdism. So yeah, I kind of went off on a tangent, but you know, it's you gotta kind of trust the process, and sometimes it's crazy. Sometimes it is really crazy, and you've got to pull back and make decisions for yourself. But
yeah,
that goes with almost everything in life, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like sometimes you said, like I mean, we've been dealing with COVID for over a year now, and that's been like you're trusting so many other people, and you're trusting the powers that be for so many things going on right now. And I mean, it's yeah, I guess it's true. I guess it applies to a lot more than just firefighting, but it's yeah, I don't know. It's a weird time,
but
man.
It's tricky. Yeah, it's tricky to trust, and it's easy to get sidelined too into like what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, I get this from my mom. Actually, I'm a full on mama's boy, but she's like, you know, what's right? You know, it's so easy to get into all these things that are negative these days. But really, like, I feel special to go out in the hills on a regular basis, and I'm lucky to do it, right? I'm fully fucking fortunate. And so if I can't bring back something positive to the table by having the ability to go outside and plug into a natural source and get this energy, then I'm doing something wrong. So I feel that's almost my obligation, you know, and if I don't feel good, then maybe I don't need to go hang out that day. Maybe I can just, you know, have a bad day and stay home. But most days I feel pretty damn good, and I want to be able to share it and give some good energy and trust that we're all going for the good things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. I much respect for being able to do that, because that seems like a very difficult thing to consistently do, is like trust that things are going to be good, like that everybody's out there looking to be better, to be better people. Like that's, you know, that's a hard sell sometimes, but I think it's such a positive thing to think that way. Like that's got to be good just to think that way, if nothing else, right?
Yeah, and it's daily work, really.
Yeah,
you know, it's really easy. I'm super sarcastic. When I first studied environmental studies and expanded my mind in university and did a little special, you know, stuff here and there to to really expand.
Yeah.
I became cynical and a sarcastic bastard because I learned all these problems that didn't have solutions, you know, especially with our environment. And it was, you know, in the middle 90s already, that's ancient days. But then there was some really sharp questions that were being brought up with what was going to happen if we didn't change things. And what were the solutions? And without having answers, when you got a mind that's trying to figure out how you could make things better, and you just learn how things are going to get worse, it's kind of a hard one to deal with. And it took me to go to France and kind of leave a bunch of that behind and just get into the moment and get into skiing and get my mind blown by being in a place where I didn't know anything. And I had to be humble, and I had to like look out, and I had to take on guides that would take me into the mountains, and then I could get a different perspective of where I came from, right? Because I was away from it. If I would have stayed in it, I don't know what would have happened exactly. I think I might have been a little bit more bitter of a person. But stepping outside and then seeing where I come from and being able to come back here, I have to put myself in check on a regular basis, you know, so I don't jump on the fucking bandwagon too. But I'm so super thankful on most days that I wake up and can do what I do, that I feel it's my work to be a better person.
Yeah.
You know, be more positive and try to look for that.
No, that's great, man. So one of the things I wanted to ask you before, well, I got a couple more things actually, and then we'll wrap up, but meditation, like I've seen a couple times that you've posted about meditation in general, like you're kind of talking about doing some like daily self work. Like what does meditation do for you personally? I'm imagining that you do it, so you think it's important. Why is it important to you? And how does it help not just your overall life, but how does it help your skiing too? Like, 'cause I think that for a lot of people, that I've talked to, it seems like that is a big part of what they do, is meditating, visualizing things, and kind of sitting and just being with themselves allows for a clearer head. Is that the case with you? Like, what is your relationship with meditation?
A big part of it was to start out my day in a way that was grounding. You know, if I can follow the breath, and my breath, and then be at peace with that day, be quiet and realize where I'm at before I start with the espresso and opening up the Instagram and all that thing, then I got a way calmer platform. And I got injured. I don't know if you know, but I broke my back in summer. I was going crazy and I was pushing it and ended up spiraling into the ground with my wing. And I got really, really fortunate. And coming back from this, I could sort of let go of everything that was worrying me. And it was just about healing. And through this healing process, so you give yourself a break, right? Because all you need to do is heal, and I was fortunate to still be able to walk, and I'd go for little walks each day, but every day I was practicing, and it takes practice, you know, the meditation with the breath, and what that would do for me, and what it continues to do for me when I practice, is just an over sense of calm, knowing that these thoughts that come in, they just arise, right? And our monkey mind can go crazy, and you can grab onto these thoughts, and then it creates this chemical reaction, and you think that the thing that you're thinking is so damn important, and you get all caught up with it, and then it's all of a sudden the thoughts controlling you. But if you can just see that thought that's coming appears into consciousness, and you can either decide, do I do something with this thought, or do I just let this thought go? Does it matter? And so you can take a second. Meditation isn't just in the morning. It's all the time. It's an awareness of what thoughts are coming in and what are going out, because we have them constantly. So then we can choose, if you're aware of what's coming into your brain through this medium, like they call consciousness, if you're aware of that thought coming in, then you can decide if, hey, should I give that, you know, precedence? Should that rule my life right now? Or should I just let that thing go? Because, you know, take a moment to say, you know, what does this matter?
Yeah, that's a very powerful idea. Like the idea of like looking at something that would normally cause you anxiety or stress and deciding whether to take on that.
And then if it's hard to control, you can add breath to that. So you change your nervous system. And this is what I'm learning, is that I was operating on fight or flight, like all the time, through skiing and reactions and just being an emotional person, mainly emotionally driven and sensation seeking constantly, for feeling, you know, and to feel good. I was realizing that I was going into this like super feel good state, grab on, you know, get the adrenaline, get the endorphins, and then go crashing down and then coming back up. And this was becoming a normal process. And what happens is it just freaking works your nervous system. And when you can stop and take a moment and say, hey, whether it's above a big cliff and you're on your skis and it makes you nervous, you listen to your breath, you know, my breath last year on the GoPro, you know, you're just gasping for breath. But if you can just take a moment, realize what's happening and change your breath with the thought itself, all of a sudden you change it from being one way in your nervous system to a whole nother. And then it's nurturing, and then you're changing your chemical response, and it goes deep that way, but it's actually pretty simple.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go too far into this, but underneath a physical therapist, Andy, friend of mine, Sabatier, he's basing off his whole physical therapy and bringing people back from major accidents and life traumas and stuff. Well, my cat's bugging me, but he's basing a lot of his
oh, hey buddy.
A lot of his teachings right on the breath. You know, and so it starts with that, and the physical stuff comes after.
Right.
Right. And so if you can do that with meditation, and look into different ways of doing it, if anybody ever has a question, they can hit me on my Instagram too, because I would love to share what I've learned and what's gotten deeper for me in the last year, because it's been a lifesaver. I mean, like really actually has, and I'm not using that lifesaver as loosely, because I needed to get a grip with the way I was going.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I crashed and almost killed myself is because I was just driving this crazy train and not taking the time to think about how I really felt, because I had clear warning signs. You know, every time I've crashed, I've had really clear warning signs, and whether I listened to it or not and took that time to stop. And so the meditation's not just in the morning. It's kind of all day long, you know?
Yeah. I imagine people have questions about this, because it's such a, you're hearing, especially athletes, talk about it more and more, like how important these kind of things are in their recoveries and just in being present in whatever moment before they do a thing. I think people will probably have some questions on this, because it seems like it's way more important than maybe just a few years ago anybody would have realized.
Right. It definitely is becoming much more in the light. There's different teachers that are out there that have, you know, through podcasts and their apps on the phone. Mm-hmm. There's different guys and gals that have been able to give it more readily. And I think because of our, you know, day and age and how there's so many things happening and we're getting bombarded by so many things. And it can be, like we said, really negative, you know, but it also can just be a freaking wild ride if you just let your mind go with whatever freaking pops up.
Yeah.
How do you have time for what you really care about? So I think lot of us are bringing it out because we need to find a way to slow things down and just focus on what's important for us and other people around us. And so I'm working on it. It's daily, you know, and I feel like I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anybody that wants to talk about it, but I'm open.
Okay. So I think they should, and I think they should hit you up for this one. I do want to touch on one more thing, and that's, you're a cat person, not a dog person, it seems. Why? What's, and I realize that's an assumption, but I have a cat. If I just picked up my cat the way you picked up your cat, I would have lost my head. Like there's no chance that I would still be talking right now. Like that's insane to me.
You would have ripped off your face.
100%. 100%. Without a doubt. It's
No, it's funny. It's Bird and the cat up here on the hill. And he's my little buddy. I wanted a cat for a long time. And I found them through a friend, and then the whole virus COVID thing hit. And at the same time, you know, then I got injured, and he's a little over a year old. And I just can't believe this guy, how I fell in love with him, you know, and he's just freaking right there for me.
He's just
and
hanging out.
I can take off. I mean, I can leave for a few days.
It's totally fine. That's why I feel the same way.
I can give him food.
Yeah.
My sister's next door. We're lucky we live next door to each other. And so she can come check on him. But this last time I went to Crystal, I just left the window parted because the bugs haven't started yet this year.
Yeah.
And I was just praying that he didn't drag some inside and let it go. But he was fine when I came back. He was a little pissed off, followed me around. I was like, meow, meow, meow.
Yeah.
But he was okay the next day and came up and snuggled a little bit. It's funny how these little critters can just become a part of your life, because I never saw myself to be dependent on an animal to feel good. I was like, I don't need that.
Right.
And now I'm like looking forward to seeing my little buddy. I call his name Sylvan, after the steep skier, Sylvan Sudan.
Sylvan.
Yeah. And he's just my little buddy, man.
Very
glad
cool
to have him.
Very cool.
good cat.
Michael, tell people where they can find you on social media. Anything else you have going on? Where can people find you online?
Social media, Instagram is birdware, and that's where do you want to be? BIRDWHERE. And come say hi, you know, if you guys are thinking about coming north and want to see what's up, just say hello and I'll be there.
Perfect. That sounds awesome. Alrighty, that was episode who knows what with Bird, Michael Bird Schaefer at Birdware on Instagram. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Talk to you guys on Thursday with Caroline Patton. What's up? Bye.